America, we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. To serve others in ways that promote human flourishing and create a ripple effect of transformation for generations to come. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
This is Oklahoma Perspective. Student loan debt in the U.S. is reaching epidemic proportions, with the sum of all student debt totaling over $1 trillion. Recently, KRMG's Russell Mills talked with an expert on the subject who gave tips on what you can do to help reduce your student loan debt.
We are on with James Herbert. He is a senior vice president at First Republic Bank and co-head of Eagle Lending. Is that part of First Republic Bank, or is that a separate business?
It is. It's a division of First Republic Bank focused on how we help a younger clientele.
Okay, gotcha. And thanks for calling in today, because we're going to talk about something. I've done several stories about this, and it is a crisis in this country, and it affects a lot of people. And people in an age range that may stupefy you. I recently heard a story on another network about a 72 or 73-year-old woman who still had about $40,000 in student loan debt. You sent us some information, and thanks for doing that. The Federal Reserve estimates student loan debt in this country is over $1.5 trillion. That's with a TR, $1.5 trillion. That's huge, but it also takes an emotional toll. And that's kind of the topic that we're going to discuss today with Mr. Herbert. And kind of tell us why you're out here today talking about this, if you don't mind.
Sure. We want to make sure that everyone knows what the options are to get out from under the student loan burden. In the survey that we did, we surveyed 2,000 people who had student loan debt, and what we discovered was that 75% of them were depressed by their debt, 50% felt shackled to their job, and another 50% had not bought a home, all because of this burden. With 44 million people in the U.S. who have this emotional and financial burden, we want to make sure people know what the options are.
And we'll talk about some of those options, but let's talk a little bit about this survey. You said that you surveyed 2,000 Americans. Was this a national survey, or was it? You guys are in the Bay Area, right?
We're a national bank, but we are headquartered in the Bay Area. It was a national survey.
Okay. So this is, this is from people all over the country, and you said 74% of them found their student loan debt depressing, like debilitatingly depressing, or it just really, they feel like they're shackled financially?
I think they feel like they're shackled financially. People didn't feel like they could get on with their lives. They weren't able to achieve their future goals. More than 40% of them felt like they didn't actually have the ability to go take up a hobby or do something fun because of the payments that were required. And we have people also that are making 6, 8, 10, 12 payments each month to different processors on different dates for different amounts. It's also just a lot to keep track of. So if you refinance your loans, another benefit that happens is you can consolidate into one monthly payment, which is just one way we can help remove some of that burden.
All right. So I'll tell you, I've got a good friend who has a girlfriend who has about $100,000 in student debt. And she told him, "I will never get out from under this." I don't think that's true. I think she can. She's a young lady. She should be able to figure it out, but she needs a plan. And I would think a consolidation, or at least getting with a financial planner and trying to figure out a way to do it, would take some of that stress and some of that depression away. Is that kind of the goal of what you're trying to do here?
Absolutely. The best place to start with making a plan is look at your current student loans, understand the interest rate, such that when you search online, which you can do very simply, go search student loan refinance, you can start to see and compare the options that are out there. A number of the resources will show you the different lenders, rates, terms, and features, and you can determine what's right for you based on your unique financial situation. Unfortunately, your friend's girlfriend is not alone. There's more than 2 million people in the U.S. who have $100,000 of debt or more, but there are lots of options to help them. Lenders will refinance loans from $5,000 up to $500,000. So there's hopefully a solution for almost everybody.
So I guess the question becomes, well, how would she start that process? Where do you go? I mean, do you just get online and Google refinance my debt? Or, you know, is there maybe a resource where we could kind of narrow the search a little bit?
That truthfully is the best way to do it. As some of the top couple hits, you'll see a couple different resources that compare across multiple lenders. So on one site, you'll be able to see what different their rates are, what their features are, the loan size, the terms, and you should understand what's right for you. Some people, it's very important, some of the federal protections that they have around forbearance and deferment, so you should understand whether or not the student loan refinance is right for you. But in general, since you'll be able to lower your interest rate so much, it hopefully there's an option that will help get you out of debt sooner.
Okay, I'm going to call shenanigans on forbearance deferment because I don't know what that means. So can you explain to me what that is?
Sure. There are a couple different protections that basically say if you are laid off or if you decide to go back to school and don't want to pay when you're going to grad school, that protect you from having to do current monthly payments. So those are some protections that are provided by federal loans. Some private loans have them, some don't. So it's just one of those things where we want to be transparent and try and people get to the right options for them.
So I realize it's a case-by-case thing, but generally speaking, in your experience, is there one factor that should be considered as the primary motivator to take a particular refinancing structure? For example, the interest rate or the term, or is it really a case-by-case thing?
The headline one you should focus on is the interest rate. Second is term. But if you lower your interest rate, regardless of your term, you are going to save money by having lower interest payments across the life of your loan. So if you had to focus on one particular area, that's the one.
All right. So how does it work that I can take a loan that's – well, let me ask you this first. What is the interest rate on a lot of these student loans, or is it all over the map?
For the federal ones that are being refinanced, it's all over the map, but they range from as low as 4 up to as high as 10. When you're refinancing, you can usually lower the average rate by a significant amount. In fact, we've cut people's interest rates by more than half and offer interest rates as low as 1.95%. It is one of the reasons why we'd encourage you to shop around and understand what different lenders have, and also go ask your local bank whether they have an offering as well.
Okay, so then I can do the follow-up question, which is, how does that work? Why is it some people are going to charge me 10 and I can turn around and refinance and get it for 2, and why didn't I just do that in the first place?
When you're going to school, the federal government doesn't know much about you, and so they don't price their loans every differently. They give everyone the same rate. By the time that you come out and you have a job, there's more information on you, and so lenders are able to hopefully give you a much better rate.
I see. So you've been able to establish a little bit of history.
That's correct.
Is there a good strategy for doing that? Maybe having a couple credit cards, or maybe financing some small things like, I don't know, appliances or something in order to get some files in my credit jacket?
No, in general, people are just looking for overall kind of credit worthiness and financial responsibility. So most lenders are trying to see, do you think that you've been making financially prudent decisions? If that's the case, you're probably on the right track.
Interesting. And I would presume that in applying for these loans, I would have to qualify just as I would for any other kind of commercial loan, like for a home or an auto?
You do have to qualify, and different lenders have different standards, which is one of the reasons we encourage people to shop online to find one that's right for them. And you should also be looking for a lender that doesn't have any fees or prepayment penalties, which most don't have, but it's something to be aware of.
Okay, so how much can I expect, or what kind of fee structure should I be looking for? Are there loans out there that are, you know, free, or...
Yeah, you should be looking for no fees, for no origination fees, and no prepayment penalties if you're able to pay off your debt sooner.
All right. So all of this can be basically researched online, is what I'm hearing you say, and it's really a good idea to spend the time to do that, to take, you know, measure twice, cut once, find the right loan for your individual situation. Does that sum it up fairly?
It does indeed. The refinance industry as a whole is relatively new, which is why a lot of people aren't aware that this is an option. So we are encouraging everyone to go take a look, particularly as interest rates rise. We want everyone to be able to lock in a low refinance rate while rates are still low.
Okay, and you bring up an interesting point there, which the Fed is expected to meet, is it three or four more times this year, I think? And they have been bumping that interest rate up just a notch every time for the last year and a half or so. So is the clock ticking? Do I need to really hustle to get this going?
We think right now while rates are low, it's the perfect time to lock them in. We don't have any crystal ball about where they're going, but we do know that they're at wonderful low rates right now, and we encourage everyone to take advantage of that.
For those who are nearing retirement, or if you're wondering how you can financially prepare yourself, annuities might be a tool for you. KRMG's Russell Mills talks with Dan Keady about what an annuity is and how it works.
The topic du jour is manage your money in a volatile market. Volatility in the markets scares people. And, there's been study after study done. If you just, if you dropped your money into an equity-linked CDs, say it was linked to the, S&P 500, and just left it there for 20 years, you're going to make, 6, 7, 8% on average over the long term. But people don't do that, do they? They get in, they get out, they freak out when there's volatility. And this, let's face it, recently we've had a lot of that.
We certainly have. It was certainly a wake-up call last year. And I think one of the things that you're talking about is over a long period of time, the best advice is to do nothing, don't panic, and stay the course. But I think, and especially as a CFP professional, I see that it's really important for people to work through on the emotional side. Even myself, and I've been in the business a very long time, when I see my account statements go down and go down so rapidly, kind of makes you feel uncomfortable.
Well, yeah. And everybody, most of us are not not watching the market, like a hawk. We're not reading the Wall Street Journal every day or have a stock ticker up on our desktop. We're more going about our lives. And then all of a sudden the stock market takes a big tumble and we start thinking about our 401k and we kind of freak out. Financial decisions often get made on an emotional basis. But unfortunately, by the time your average investor has freaked out, the drop has already occurred and now they're saying, get me out, get me out, get me out. It's kind of a, buy high, sell low scenario that's just not good. So how do we avoid that? How do we avoid making those emotional decisions?
Yeah, I think the first thing to do is, if you have a market downturn, is to have a family discussion, because what I've seen is that often it creates quite a bit of angst in the family unit when the markets go down. And you need to talk that out, but I like to have some guardrails on it. Stay away from the blame game, which usually starts like this. You picked a bad investment because it went down, and move on to productive things. Why were they investing? Because if they were not really investing, but saving up for a short-term goal and simply put it in the stock market in order to try to make a lot of money, that may not be a wise decision. They need to really think that. If they're investing for the long run, they need to kind of write that out so it's there. They can remind why they're doing it. But they do have to talk out these feelings, because we need to be able to move on and hit other, I think, core points to build on this.
So wouldn't it be a good idea generally to only invest in the stock market with funds that are, discretionary or at least won't be needed in anything like the near-term future, maybe 5-10 years out, and keep another asset that's more, maybe not more liquid, because obviously stocks are very liquid, but maybe that's more stable, so that you've got that sort of cushion?
Yeah, I always talk about building a safety net before you fall. So you need to build an emergency fund in a safe product like a bank, or if you're saving up for something to buy near term. The other one that people tend to forget about is paying off those high interest credit cards. You really need to pay off those high interest credit cards, because that's another problem that you have. So getting rid of those two can help. Now, one of the other things that many people have forgotten is that when the 401k came out with its investments in it, it was never meant as a standalone. it was in conjunction with a pension where you got a check for life. So one of the things that can be important is for people to think in terms of an annuity that can provide lifetime income with a portion of their savings, growth as well as growth from the equities, but also some income to replace the old defined benefit pension plans of yesteryear.
So what kind of annuities are we talking about? Because I have heard extensively that annuities are not a very good investment. They'll actually end up losing money over time with an annuity because of the fee structure, because, surrender penalties. There's a lot to it. I know they're complex animals, but is there a particular type of annuity you think is okay?
Yeah, and I think if you look at many of the economists who've written on consumer economics, they would point to a specific type of annuity that's called a single premium immediate annuity. And what happens is you literally take some of your investments and you hand that over to an insurance company, and then you get a check for the rest of your life. There's other types of annuities that can be much more convoluted and typically will have fees, substantial fees associated with them. But the one that most economists talk about is getting a check for life to replace the pension plan. For example, at TIA, we have people getting those income who are beyond the age of 90, over 31,000. Most people think you're going to say 80, Dan, but actually that's above 90. So you could live a very long time. The other part that people tend not to think through is in drawing income is you want to have some stable income that's going to last as long as you do, so that even if things don't go well with the market or if you live a long time, that you won't end up with only Social Security. But getting back to your question, yeah, I think there's a specific type of annuity that is preferable in terms of creating income. Simple and has been around for a really, really long time.
Okay. And it's called what again? I'm sorry.
Yeah, they would call that a single premium immediate annuity. And it's places, you're just putting it into this annuity product, you let it build, and it starts an income, many, many years in the future. And it's a way, really, of just replacing the old defined benefit checks that people used to get, the pensions, and builds some surety beyond Social Security. And that can also help people stay in the market with the remainder of their money, because obviously, if you're going to live perhaps 30 years in retirement, you also have to have a growth component, and that, of course, would be your investment portfolio, such as equities.
Okay, and I definitely can see where in this age of, fewer and fewer companies offering pensions, where, some kind of guaranteed income in later years would be great. But and we are almost out of time, but can you briefly tell me just how does this annuity work? How much money do I have to put in, and how long does it take me to recoup what I've actually not invested but paid into it?
Yeah, so if somebody was to buy an annuity today, and I'm just using hypothetical rates, I don't have the exact ones in front of me.
Of course.
And say they were 65, they're probably getting about a 6.5% return. So they would really have to live right about life expectancy to win. So in other words, if somebody lives past life expectancy with an annuity, they get more than they put in. And that's the whole idea. It's called pooling, much like the old pensions, where those who pass away early are really paying for those who live into old age, the concept of annuity pooling, so that those who pass on are really paying. That's how they could pay higher rates and keep paying for lifetime. Does that make some sense?
Kind of, but it sounds to me like you'd be wanting to do that when you're 30 or 40, not 60 or 70, because otherwise you're never gonna get there.
It's a good idea to start putting some money aside for an annuity, but typically you wouldn't want that income to start until you were in retirement. Because interestingly enough, we have over, 31,000 people who are getting over the age of 90 who are getting income checks from their annuities. So it's, again, it's not the whole plan, but it's part of the plan, and it adds a lot of surety in retirement.
Dan Keady with TIAA. Special thanks to KRMG's Russell Mills for the interviews. This is Oklahoma Perspective. For Cox Media Group, I'm Bert Williams.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.